Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
It's We Want Winners. Rod and I are back talking about the 49ers and Chargers, the very last preseason game. And the 49ers made two trades in the last few days to hopefully improve their roster. I don't imagine the roster construction is done considering the injuries. We'll talk a little bit about Juwan Jennings and his situation. I think Tim Kawakami reported that it's possible he could go on IR. I have not heard anything else about that. And then after we do this little intro segment, we're going to have a pre-recorded interview that we did with Chris Allen, who works for Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life website. Very heavy fantasy football segment, but the good thing about it is lots of Niners talk as well. The one thing that fantasy football guys can do is they can talk about regular football as well because of how much they study, and I thought Chris was really good. And Rod and I had a lot of 49ers-based questions, though not only 49er-based questions. We did, you know, when you have a great mind in fantasy football like Chris, for us, Rod and I have been playing fantasy football forever. We did have some, you know, nerdier questions for him. But, Rod, let's kick this off. By the way, for those who are watching on video, that YouTube video with Chris, the interview, is already up for you listening on audio. We'll play the audio of that after Rod and I chit chat here for a little bit. So Rod, we watched the game yesterday, 49ers Chargers, kind of sloppy, lots of second and third stringers trying to make the team. Anything that you learned that we haven't already discussed from the previous two games, any insight to some folks who maybe stood out in good or bad ways?
It was a rough watch.
If you're a fan of muff punts, that game is for you.
Yeah, that was, if the handwriting wasn't already on the wall for Junior Bergen with the Sky Moore acquisition, he did not help himself at all with that performance. I kind of felt bad for him. But yeah, I can't really add any insight more than if anybody who watched the game, the only insights I have are things that, you know, Tim Ryan pounded to death, like the Luder Flowers competition. Just, you know, and those are like, you know, fringe. It could be important, but, you know, kind of fringe roster moves. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I think more so than any, year in recent memory, I am on the lookout for dudes that aren't even on the team being really in play, like guys that are cut from other situations who actually might be in a better position to make this roster than the guys that have been here all summer.
You know what's funny? We were talking about the wide receiver roster, the depth chart, and we were saying last week how, you know, Shanahan is so averse to playing younger players that it makes sense that someone like Robbie Chosen is having a good preseason, because I'm sure Kyle would like to put somebody in there who's a vet who he can rely on over a younger player who may make a mistake in a game or run the wrong thing or not block or whatever that may be. Now, it looks like Russell Gage may be hurt, so he may not make the roster right away. But at this point, you know, same thing. Other teams are also looking for who's on the waiver wire. And the 49ers may be able to cut Russell Gage and then bring him back. I have a feeling, like you said, there's going to be a lot of playing with the depth chart over the next 2 weeks, because they do have 2 weeks till the season starts. The one that we had mentioned, Kendrick Bourne, was number one on Matt Barros's chart. He put together like over 30 names. I think it's like 30 names of guys who may be available, who the Niners could actually either trade for a late round pick or just pick up on the waiver wire. Sky Moore was on that list too, but Sky Moore was like in the middle, like after like the first 15 or something. So there are going to be guys more than likely who I imagine the 49ers are going to like better than some of the wide receivers who are, you know, at the end of their active roster, Sky Moore being one of them. Like, I actually thought they utilized him fairly well. Like, he was kind of all over the place, and you could see that he's, you know, he's got some speed, and that was nice to see. But at the end of the day, are the 49ers going to trust a guy? Now, I actually pulled up his numbers, and here are Sky Moore's numbers. And this is with the Kansas City Chiefs of all teams, right? Sky Moore, and his,
you know, and with context, last year they were in bad shape at receiver.
Yes. So his rookie season, he played all 16 games, 22 catches, 250 yards. His second year, he played 14 games, 21 receptions, 244 yards. Last year, 6 games, zip. So it doesn't, it's not a, you know, it's not a surprise that he's available for the 49ers. I think what I am wondering is if they find some guys that are waived, if they actually have those guys ahead of Sky Moore, who they gave up or they flip-flopped picks with the Chiefs. So they could have made this trade, end up cutting him at the end of the day and just losing the flip-flop and, you know, getting the worse of that pick for nothing, just for the you know, couple-week tryout or whatever. So that's what I'm interested in. And sort of the same thing, like, I looked at their roster earlier today on The Athletic. Matt Barros had like his guess of today where the roster would stand. And, you know, we're talking about fantasy football here. There is very much a stars and scrubs mentality to how they are putting this roster together, because they have absolute studs at certain positions. Tight end. How many tight ends are better than George Kittle in the NFL? Very few, if any, right? Brock Purdy, top 10-ish quarterback for most. Christian McCaffrey. And the problem with Christian McCaffrey is every time you say his name, you have to say if he's healthy, which is an unfortunate thing. But if he is healthy, who is a better weapon in football? Very few players. So you have this high...
Maybe.
Right. But and they used him so much last year. We'll see how much tread is on those tires. I hope not much if you're just a fan of football, because that dude was awesome last year. But And also, you know, linebacker, Fred Warner, stud, Nick Bosa, stud, Trent Williams, stud. They have those studs, but when you look at the back end of their depth, there's guys who I wonder if some of the lesser rosters would even have on their roster, who the Niners have to employ because of the fact that they are so injured right now. And so it's not only going to be receiver position that I'm wondering. I really wonder about other positions, offensive line, defensive line. Is somebody's straggler who they're trying to pass through so they can put on the practice squad, is that person like a backup for the Niners? It's quite possible because of what their depth chart looks like.
That is what I have all through this. Because during this offseason, I've watched like a degenerate quite a bit of preseason football. So like yesterday, I was watching the Packers, and that same thing occurred to me is they were talking about with their situation, whether or not they were going to keep six defensive interior players. And, you know, I legitimately, when they were going down the list of those six, it's like, I don't think any of our players could play for the Packers, and anybody that they cut might start here. So, I mean, it's like that. It's always said on cut day on Tuesday that a lot of guys shouldn't get too comfortable, because just because you make it, just because you are on the 53 Tuesday at 3 o'clock or whatever, that does not necessarily mean that you are safe, and yep, that somebody else who is made available at the last minute won't come in and take your spot. So I think I think our team is one of those teams that even once the 53 is set, I don't think that anybody can be comfortable.
So what do you take of not only this Sky Moore deal? We could talk a little bit more about it, but also they went out and traded for Brian Robinson. Now, Brian Robinson's stat sheet looks a lot better, and I'll give his numbers right now, because he's very same ages or same how many years he's played as Sky Moore. With the Commanders all 3 years. First season, he had 797 rushing yards in 12 games. Second season, 733 in 15. Last year, in 14 games, 799. So very consistent RB2 production, and probably even more production than your normal RB2. And I do wonder, is this a play, or is this basically saying, Garendo, you're not healthy. You don't stay healthy. We need someone as the RB2 who stays healthy, and Garendo is the RB3. Or are they still thinking Garendo's the RB2, but because he's often injured, you want to have someone ready right there? Patrick Taylor Jr. out for the season already just because of a shoulder thing. And then you have the young player who hasn't been able to play James yet. So there's nobody stable there. So then you go get a professional football player who has played and been successful as a backup before.
Well, I mean, except that if you as you were going through the rundown, he's missed 10 games in the past 3 years. So you can pretty much pencil him down for 2 to 3 missed games a year too. So while, the book on, I happen to have a few Commando fans in my life, but the book on him is he's going to get you what's blocked.
Yep.
He's not really explosive. But like you say, he was their starter in air quotes, but him and Eckler kind of handled it. It was like the quintessential committee. B-Rob handled the first two downs, and Eckler was a third down back with pretty much defined roles. But when you have a guy like B-Rob as your RB1, you're going to be looking to replace him. And, they were able to do that with Chris Rodriguez and our guy Bill. Anybody who's a fantasy football player just Jaquaski Merritt, it has had a great preseason. And so it's still a committee there, but they've decided to go with younger, cheaper guys. And were able to get a draft pick for somebody who probably wasn't going to make their roster anyway. So again, it's for the 49ers, it's better than I don't think it's too, it's a hot take to say that Brian Robinson is probably better than Jeff Wilson. And to be able to get him for for a sixth round pick was probably a good move. With Garindo, we don't know what his status will be, especially in the next 2 weeks. So you don't want to go into the season with, I'd imagine you don't want to go into the season with Jeff Wilson and nothing else. So at least they were able to solidify that position. And between him and Garindo, that's a RB2 is not a, I don't know that it's necessarily a strength, but because I've watched a lot of Commandos football, and they say Kyle's got his new Debo, which is just ridiculous. They went and got the real Debo when they had Brian Robinson. So yeah, that lets you know that Cliff Kingsbury definitely doesn't see him as a Debo. They might have, thought that hoped that might, they're just different kind of players. But yeah, it was a good move. I don't know that you necessarily would find somebody on waivers who's better than Brian, because he has been one of the best 32 running backs his three years in the league. So that's a good pickup, I think.
Okay, so as we look towards, when is cutdown? I forgot to look at that date.
Tuesday at 1 o'clock our time.
So upcoming Tuesday.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow, it's early.
Yeah.
And so they got to get to their number. Mm-hmm. But then they're going to be probably making moves all the way up until next week, and even into the right before the game, because I'm sure there's going to be lots of finagling with rosters in the league. So that is going to be a super fun day to look on. And I do wonder, I wonder how Lynch and Shanahan are going to be doing this, because, and this is why football is so cutthroat, you got all these young guys who could make the 53 and you congratulate them. We've watched enough Hard Knocks to see how that works, both the congratulations and then just the brokenheartedness of not making the team. But there might be guys who they go, you're part of the 53, and then 3 days later they may have to change their mind based on who's available. So I can't imagine that that's an easy thing to do, but at the same time, to be in that job with both of those dudes, you probably just have to kind of get used to that idea. But That is something, because you have guys who, I'm sure the Niners are going to try and sneak guys through the practice squad as well. Do you think the Hulk makes the team?
I think he might make it initially, and it has been the last few years, because ESPN has, their masters, say what you want about them and how they run their business, but they have done a great job of commoditizing all of this. And if you've watched those shows, NFL Live or the Cutdown Day specials, it has gotten to the point where teams do this like gamesmanship thing where they are, not cutting guys to right at the deadlines. There'll be a rush of players who are available, because like you say, with the hopes that maybe other players make moves and they're able to kind of teams are able to sneak their guys through, get them cleared, and then either bring them back on the practice squad or bring them back on their roster. So there's going to, I think that you're going to see a lot of jockeying this, you know, like you said, in the after Tuesday, in that next week after. I don't think anybody can really, really feel safe until, you know, we get to the middle of week, you know, the first week of the season. I mean, you know, next week, because I think that far after Tuesday, you're still going to be seeing moves and jockeying and maybe even trades and all kinds of more so than maybe in years past.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, I mean, this year, again, like I just look at it as like the Stars and Scrubs mentality, and I don't mean scrub in a like a super pejorative way, but just the mm-hmm. idea that because you have such a high dollar figure for players at certain positions, you have to cut, you know, you have to have a lesser position player who's making a lot less money to counterbalance that when it comes to cap stuff. Yep. It is very much like a fantasy football auction budget. So
in that case, yeah,
hopefully they have some of these players who are not making a ton of money and can, you know, the rookie class, obviously we got to see a lot of Nick Martin, and Nick Martin has made some plays. We got to see a lot. We got to see some Siegel, and he looks really good. So hopefully some folks from that class are beneficial to this team, and it allows them to really, you know, be able to have such a crazy range in the salaries for these players. But
and it really kind of, you know, it's one of those situations where rookies and rookie wage scale guys, I would think, you know, we talk about like, you know, we watch the NBA. It really, you know, with the second apron and all that, is really what that has done in the NBA. It really has made, you know, one of the unintended consequences in the NBA is that second round picks are now very important, because those guys, you know, if you're top heavy, you need those guys to hit. So the more, you know, I know a lot, you know, you hear people talk about having those dart throws. It's kind of the same thing in the NFL, that if you can get these draft picks are important, because if you can, the more of those picks you have, you can lock in, even if they're just rotation level players, in at minimum cost for 4 years, as opposed mm-hmm. to, and it seems like, you know, with those 11 draft picks that we had this year, that there was a concerted effort to try to get younger and getting off of that, you know, veteran minimum roller coaster that we had been on, you know, with guys like Floyd and Malik Collins and the like, those kind of players who are basically rotation players, mm-hmm. but are at a veteran minimum, which is kind of even at times four times more than a rookie minimum. So if you, the more of those rookies and second year players that you can get in, especially when you talk about a team like the 49ers who are top heavy, the more of those young guys you can hit on, it really is beneficial to you if you can offset guys who are at the top of their position wage scale. If you can offset those with, you know, serviceable players who are making $1 million, it really, really is beneficial.
All right. So the Niners do not play next week, but we do want to have a show either next weekend or maybe before, sometime during the week before the season starts. We'll figure that out. Rod and I have to look at our schedules and figure when the best time is. So, but we'll be back to talk about the roster and to talk about some of those adjustments they may make, the depth chart stuff, the waiver wire pickups. I imagine that there's going to be lots and lots of moves. So I almost don't even want to say let's record right after the roster, because I don't imagine that the roster is going to be exactly the same. So we will probably wait and be cautious before we get a good look at what the team is going to look like. Again, if you are watching on YouTube, the video that we did with Chris Allen is already up. So you can just look in the We Want Winners or 49ers section and you can see that. And that was recorded last Thursday. So there's no Brian Robinson, no Sky Moore talk. That happened before any of the deals that they've made. So no talk about those guys, but lots of talk about Kittle and Ricky Pearsall and Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey and such. So
definitely anybody who's fantasy relevant. I think we did a pretty good job of covering, and like Garrett said, I think there was some just general fantasy football talk that was beneficial as well. At least, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed nerding out with somebody who is, he's easily the most knowledgeable person I've ever talked to, you know, physically, literally talked to, you know, so it was a real treat. And again, you know, he's well worth a follow. And like he had suggested, and you'll hear the everybody over there at Fantasy Life, they are at the top of the food chain in terms of fantasy information. That's just Matt Berry, anybody, if you have even a tangential interest in fantasy football, you know that he is kind of has been the gold standard in that space for
made it his career, you know. Man, this dude wrote Matthew Berry wrote, I want to say it was Crocodile Dundee 2, like that or something, that he wrote a Crocodile Dundee movie and he was trying to make it in Hollywood, and as he was working in Hollywood he started doing fantasy football stuff. And at some point, he realized that his future was actually in fantasy football and not as a screenwriter. And he joined ESPN, and he had what was his website? It was The Talented Mr. Roto. That was his website. And so then ESPN like bought his stuff, and he worked at ESPN for many, many years before. I think now he's at NBC Sports, and mm-hmm. then he's also doing the Fantasy Life stuff on the side. And if you've heard any Matthew Berry podcasts where he was a guest, his story about like getting people to invest in his website is actually pretty interesting. Like I think he got like Mav Carter and a bunch of different people to just invest in their latest round of funding. So he's into it, man. He's so dialed into fantasy football stuff. So I've been a big Matthew Berry fan.
He really is, you know, and say what you will about, I haven't heard anybody who has anything negative to say about Matthew Berry. He is, he's just great. But, you know, I place him in that same category of Mel Kiper, whom I don't always agree with, but I respect the hell out of. So when you talk about somebody who created a lane for himself out of whole cloth, I have always had just a tremendous respect and have been inspired by, you know, guys like that who, you know, like you said, Mel Kiper I don't watch Mel Kiper and like try to, you know, how many he got right or wrong or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I just marvel at the fact that, you know, he was at the forefront of this analysis thing. And he was a guy who was literally, back, you know, I go way, way back with ESPN Radio, and he was a guy who was literally working out of his basement, producing a newsletter, and became, you know, he became the draft guy. He was the first real, you know, there are a lot of draft guys now, but there's no question that Mel Kiper was the first national draft guy. And he created that lane out of whole cloth. And that's just, it's inspiring to me. And Matthew Berry, I think, is of that same ilk.
Absolutely. By the way, before we get out, or before we move, get out of here on video and move on to the audio on podcast. Have you watched any of the Dallas Cowboys Netflix thing?
It is amazing. And if you, you know, I know how 49er fans feel about the Cowboys because, you know, I shared that feeling, but we are an integral part of that story because we, you know, I don't care how you feel about them. You can't talk about those 90s teams without talking about the Cowboys. They yep. were our nemesis.
Yep.
You know, so we are, you know, so it was good to read because those are mostly good times for us. I mean, obviously their rise, you know, was, you know, it was bad for, you know, several years until, you know, we were able to turn the table on them. And, you know, that's always kind of glorious to relive. But yeah, it is really well made. And we have our team has a pretty significant role in it.
Yeah, I just started episode 3, which starts with the 92 NFC title game and Jerry Rice.
There's a lot of heartbreak. There's no question. Yeah. There's a lot of because obviously any Cowboy success was pretty much at our expense. You know, if anybody who was there remembers that those NFC championship games were de facto championship games. I mean, those were, you know, in most cases, the AFC was an afterthought.
I was thinking about this because I was trying to tell somebody who remembers that stuff, but, you know, not very well. And I was saying how the 92, 93, and 94 NFC title games felt so big that I can't remember another sports event that felt that big until, and talk about heartbreak, Warriors Cavs game 7. That's the only other thing. Like the Warriors finals were really big, but they didn't have that backs up against the wall where football's mm-hmm. only one game. And so you're like, I can replay this game 100 times in my mind, but there's only one outcome. And so game 7, Warriors Cavs is the only thing that I that is kind of like that. Now, there's a Giants, you know, Royals game 7, Madison Bumgarner, but the Royals were the Royals. They weren't like, if it was like Giants Dodgers, something like that, then yeah, then that's there. But Niners Cowboys there was nothing bigger in my late teens or, you know, mid to late teens than Niners Cowboys. Like I literally would like think up scenarios in my mind about how the Niners had to start this game so that they would not fall behind and then allow the Cowboys to just, you know, ride Emmett to the whole thing, you know, because that was the whole thing. Like they just ride Emmett with the lead and there's almost nothing that we could do. But there's like nothing bigger than Niners Cowboys when I was younger.
And it was so, that is such a great analogy, that Warriors game 7, because for me, that when I think back to that Cavs series, it was like a slow skid on black ice. And it's like, we're up 3-1 and then Draymond gets suspended. And it's like, you can kind of just see the car crash on the way. And it's just like, there was, you know, you talk about, the analogy to me is similar in that you knew how, if they were able to get up on us, you just knew how this was going to play out. And then once they got even, it's like, oh no, this is not good. And, you know, one game, you know, there's an analogy there between LeBron and Emmett and how inevitable, you know, a fourth quarter lead, there's an inevitability that fourth quarter lead was with those Cowboys teams. So you knew what the recipe was going to be if they were up by 10 in the fourth quarter. You knew you what it was going to be. You're going to be a steady diet at Emmitt Smith, and you knew you probably weren't going to be able to stop it. Kind of like in a one game scenario, LeBron James is terrifying. You know, at that point in his career, by the time we get to 2016, you know, that guy was, he was, you know, a game wrecker, and there was nothing we could do. And that is just kind of heartbreaking as a fan to kind of, you know, watch your team in those situations.
And
you know,
and then
like you're getting the, you're getting the 92, but then, you know, we know now we know that, you know, the tables are going to turn at some point.
Yeah.
And
we get one.
Right.
Even if you stop, let's say they run Emmitt twice and let's say he gets 7 yards and it's third and three. Then, and this was more the 93 game, if I'm remembering correctly, than the 92 game. But then they would pass and Troy would just dump off to Emmitt. And I imagine Bill Romanowski still has nightmares of having to try and cover Emmitt Smith out of the backfield, because Romanowski basically is gone after that 93 title game because of how much he was abused out of the backfield. And then they brought in, you know, some other linebackers, Ken Norton Jr., who came from the Cowboys and such, because they needed to be a little bit more athletic in the middle there. But yeah, just fascinating stuff. I want to get through some more, and maybe we'll have more comments on another show to talk about it. Cause it's just, again, nothing bigger in my lifetime than Niners Cowboys when it came to two teams. And then previous to that, which we talked about last year, Joe and Steve, like nothing dominated Bay Area sports talk more than Joe versus Steve. What a crazy.
And I tell you what, that's exactly where my mind goes when you think of that. It's like how, you know, and Steve Young was legitimately, he's a Hall of Famer regardless, but how the narrative changes if we don't get it done in 94, how the narrative around Steve Young, how we talk about him changes, because, you know, he was, you know, I find it fascinating. You look at a guy like Lamar now, you know, can't get it done. That was Steve Young. Steve Young couldn't win the big one. And, you know, it's the classic Gary Plummer, you know, taking the monkey off his back.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was the thing. And, you know, in the context of the 49er sphere, when you're talking about the comparison to Joe Montana, and who never lost one, and it just, you know, if he doesn't get at least one, you know, obviously he was a great player, but it obviously stains his legacy if he doesn't, if he's not able to, if he goes to the championship three times and, you know, doesn't get there. It that was a huge, not only victory for the franchise, but him individually as a player too.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We want to welcome Chris Allen from Fantasy Life. Now, Chris, I know Matthew Berry from back in the day because I used to listen to Fantasy Focus, the ESPN podcast. And so as early as I remember him doing that show, like, I've been a Matthew Berry guy. And then he went from ESPN and now he's at NBC. But Fantasy Life is like, you know, this is his baby. And you are writing for Fantasy Life. What is your window to joining the team, the Matthew Berry team here at Fantasy Life?
So my intro to all of this is, well, similar to you, to be quite honest. I've been a Matthew Berry guy since I first got into fantasy. You know, we were talking before we started recording here, and I started playing fantasy football around the 2011-2012 timeframe, and really there wasn't too much content out there, at least that I was aware of. I was new to just the game in and of itself, and I remember I just got completely beat down my first league that I joined, and so I wanted to find out more about the strategy behind it, what are the mechanisms in order to get better at it, and so on and so forth. So I stumbled upon this Matthew Berry guy, and I was listening to the same thing, the 06010 podcast. I mean, just week in and week out, trying to find out more about the players, the strategies, and all of that. Fast forward about 10 years or so, I was maybe 4 or 5 years into producing content of my own, working for a few different sites. I was at 444 Football, NBC Football Guys, and a few others. And then I ran into an old colleague of mine by the name of Elliot Christ. Elliot and I, we came across each other once we were working at 444, and he told me that he was starting a newsletter, and it was going to be head up by Matthew Berry. And of course, how can I say no? Right. How can you turn down an opportunity like that? And so being able to get in on essentially the ground floor of the small company, just a newsletter at the time, and seeing it blossom into where it's at right now, deals with LGTV, live shows, all of that, the content behind it, all the products, the utilization report that's provided by Dwayne McFarland, seeing shows with Ian Harditz, and of course, Matthew Freeman bringing on the betting, Thor Nystrom, who's doing the draft content. I mean, so many other large names and people that are producing content within the industry now, all at this one central area. And I'm just a writer there. It's just so much fun seeing this whole thing kind of blossom into where it's at right now. And very appreciative of what Matthew has done, not just for me, but for this entire industry. I know for folks that might be listening to this, that might have read his latest Love Hate column saying that this is his last year doing Love Hate. And he's going to be moving on to just more of the podcast and the TV stuff. So kind of an end of an era, but still one where he's essentially, let's say, evolving his contributions to the industry. So hats off to him, and very much appreciative for this opportunity that I've been able to provide within the Fantasy Life umbrella.
It's kind of amazing that he was still doing the writing, because I know he's doing so many other things, and the writing probably takes him the longest to do out of anything. You've seen that. I've seen that lean from a lot of writers who move into podcasting, who, you know, you can just get so many more thoughts out in a quicker fashion in a podcast than you can writing it down. So that makes a lot of sense. So I think most people know, whether you use ESPN's website to create your league, or Yahoo, or CBS Sportsline, and there's so many sleepers out there. I know a lot of people like Sleeper now. So explain what Fantasy Life is to people who kind of don't know what the difference is between all these different things.
Sure. And for anybody that has those general questions, let's say, for instance, if you're completely new to fantasy in and of itself, the amount of content and tools that are available would at least bring you in at the ground level and say, well, what are, let's say, even air yards? Let's say if you listen to a podcast and you hear all of these statistics and advanced metrics that get tossed out, and you wanted to have an understanding of what some of those metrics are, there could be articles available. There are articles available, because I wrote most of them, about some of those things. Or even if it's from a strategy standpoint, let's say this is your second or third year doing fantasy, and you want to have a better understanding of, well, I've heard about this methodology called zero RB or robust RB or hero RB. There are strategy articles around that too. Let's say you've gotten in deep, you've gone midway down the rabbit hole, and there are these other formats that you've heard of, not even just redraft or your typical managed leagues, but there's dynasty leagues and individual defensive player IDP leagues or best ball, and you wanted to find out and dip your toes into those streets as well. There are articles and podcasts trying to delve into the ins and outs of each of those. And that's essentially what Fantasy Life does. We bring in the experts from every corner of the content sphere that is fantasy football and provide you with not just the in-depth, let's get into the weeds, numbers, data analytics, and try and shove all that down your throat. No, I mean, of course, that's important. And that's part of my background. I'm an engineer by trade. But also the let's start at the high level. Let's break things down into these digestible chunks so that as you learn more, there's more content available for you to consume to help any user at any level and any understanding of the game be able to become a bit more comfortable with fantasy football. And not just that, it's not just about the content and whether it's the articles or the video formats, but it's also the tools. You have your league sync tool available. So if there is something about your league that is special, let's say even if it's just your typical half point PPR league or whatever, if you wanted to be able to sync that and have our rankings and tiers so that it will help guide you through your draft, you can do that. If you wanted to do mock drafts, we have a draft champion tool that allow you to simulate mock drafts based off of your league's tendencies. You can set up each of the different bots or whatever within there, whether you can say this person's more aggressive or whatever, in order to help you get a better feel for how your draft is going to unfold. If you want to learn more about player utilization, I was just mentioning Dwayne McFarland's utilization report, so you can dive a bit more deeper into how each player is used and figure out how to value them differently. All of that to say, it's not just about content. It's not just about tools. It's everything. Anything that you would have a question about, even down to if you just have general questions you want to ask us directly, have a Discord channel so that you can have access to us on a relatively frequent basis if you want to ask some of those questions. So it's an entire universe. It's a whole world that we've been able to create under the Fantasy Life umbrella. So whether it's from content, whether it's the tools, whether it's to just general access to us via the Discord, Fantasy Life is able to provide all of those things in a sense that regardless of your age or applicability or level of interest into fantasy football, we're there to provide that for you.
So talk about real quick, because I thought the syncing your account, how does that work? Like I have two different leagues. They go way back. One of them goes back to like 1998, and the other one goes back to 99 or 2000. So these are like historic leagues that I've been playing in for a long time. One of them's on ESPN, one of them's on Yahoo. How does this HQ sync work?
So from my understanding, the HQ sync will allow you to put in like your information to say that this is my particular league. And then afterwards, once you're synced up, it allows you to almost like side by side comparison, like, okay, here is my league. And let's say you're drafting on Yahoo, but after the software or the tools behind the scenes allow you to, once it sets that up, you're now connected in a sense that you're now being able to see our tiers and rankings compared to what Yahoo is. Or if it's on ESPN, same deal. So instead of seeing the default rankings and tiers from ESPN, you're seeing that side-by-side comparison to what we have. So it's not necessarily having to flip back and forth between the two things. You're able to see almost essentially, all right, well, Christian McCaffrey on ESPN's rankings, he's ranked at, let's say 10th or 11th overall, but I'm looking at the rankings over here on Fantasy Life and Dwayne McFarland and Ian Harditz and Matthew Friedman have him ranked 6th or 7th. So I should be able to snag him at a value. So it's all of that to say you're able to essentially translate some of the inherent values or average draft costs that are inherent to the site itself and see how you can essentially hack that particular website so that you can get the most value out of it. So it is something of a huge help for drafters, especially because you're in the moment having to make those decisions. And that tool can essentially provide you that information without the flipping back and forth like that type of thing.
Got it. All right, let's get to some questions about some players. Obviously, this is a 49ers podcast. So we'll start with kind of thoughts about some of the 49ers players. And Rod, chime in whenever you like. So last year, Christian McCaffrey was atop lots and lots of draft boards, and Rod and I were a little frustrated with the lack of communication coming out of 49ers HQ about whether or not McCaffrey was healthy, what the injury was really about, and I almost felt like, now this is gamesmanship in the NFL world, I don't exactly understand how it works, because there were lots of bets I'm sure laid on the Niners early in the season, but they seemed, you know, if we take them for face value, they didn't know the severity, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. It definitely felt like they probably think it's worse than we think it is, and so they don't care about fantasy leagues, obviously. But you know, there's Christians going atop lots and lots of leagues, so I sense that there's a little bit of a weariness with 49ers and information coming out, especially because you have guys like Juwan Jennings who is holding out, but he may not be playing because he wants his contract redone, or he's got a calf injury, and I don't know where people sort of sit on that. And you have some other players who are similar in that vein. Like, when it comes to 49ers players, 49ers players and fantasy, should fantasy owners be weary of 49er players this year just based on the lack of information coming out of Santa Clara?
I think that's fair to have some sense of hesitation before making the click on any of them, just given their relative cost. So we'll start off with Christian McCaffrey. Right now, he has a, let's say, mid to late-ish round average draft cost. He's going off the board at around, let's say, the RB4, RB5. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, I can understand folks looking to other players around his draft cost. Let's say before the injury news started to come out about Devon Achane, running back for the Dolphins, I can see people wanting to click on him. If he even wanted to pull up a guy like Derrick Henry from the second round, I can understand that because of his penchant for running through defensive lines and the workload he gets in Baltimore. But even if you wanted to switch positions and go to one of the wide receivers that's typically drafted around, I can understand that. But at least for me, the way that I've been looking at Christian McCaffrey is that while, yes, I completely share your frustration from how even Coach Kyle Shanahan delivered some of the news after the week one, I would say, scandal or mix up or whatever, because I still remember coming into the game, it was, all right, well, he was going to play. I remember even hearing Christian McCaffrey talking in the middle of August during preseason of last year, saying that, oh, he would have played if there was going to be a game that particular weekend. And of course, he sits out week one. He's still trying to get back. We don't see him until week 10. But then, of course, the Jordan Mason interview after week one, saying he was told on Friday that he was going to play. And so all of those things saying that there's something rotten in the state of Denmark, but still what they did then, but now let's compare that to the things that the 49ers are telling us, even without saying anything. Jordan Mason specifically gone from the team, the one that they trusted the most before he got injured around the week six-ish timeframe with a shoulder injury, was performing at least the primary role of Christian McCaffrey as both the rusher and receiving portions of Christian McCaffrey's workload. He's gone from the Vikings. He's gone to the Vikings, rather. The 49ers waited until day three in order to address the running back position. So if this was a team that was concerned about what Christian McCaffrey was going to be able to contribute now in his age 29 season, especially after the injury-riddled season he just had in 2024, I would think that they would either bring in more free agents and or address it via the draft. Neither of those things happened. And now let's also look at how they treated Christian McCaffrey when he came back for those three-ish games where he was healthy, because he injured himself midway through that Bills game when they were playing in the snow. When he came back, first game, I mean, he was the primary rusher. We didn't see him mix in with Isaac Garendo or anything like that. Absolutely not. Christian McCaffrey, he ran most of the routes for that team, at least from a running back standpoint, got the primary workload as a rusher. He was essentially back to the same volume. The only issue was the efficiency wasn't there, which I can understand coming off of bilateral Achilles tendonitis. Hadn't seen any particular like live action for almost 2.5 months. I can see why he might have been a little slow in getting back to form. So all that to say, it to me, the way that Christian McCaffrey performed, or at least the amount of work he was able to get once he came back, also what the team has done throughout the offseason, and of course all the current training camp reports of him being the healthiest person on the offense right now. You mentioned it yourself. Juwan Jennings is hurt. Brandon Ayuk, no timetable left for at least on the map for him to return from his ACL tear. any of the Ricky Pearsall still working his way back. Of course, there have been more positive reports in that nature. Russell Gage hurt. So what other players? I mean, it's just funny to me that out of all the players that we were thinking were going to either replace him or take some of the workload off of him, they all now have those injury concerns.
Yeah.
So for him specifically, I'm looking to him as one of the guys that I would want to target in the early rounds, or especially at his current draft toss in the middle of the first round, just given the amount of opportunity he has received in the past, and also what we can project just given the injury risks around the entire 49ers offense for 2025.
My favorite player on the Niners to try and sneak on one of my teams. I think Brock Purdy, he had more of a tendency to run a little bit last year. I don't think that meant he was running for touchdowns as much necessarily. If he does actually sneak out for touchdowns, he's a more valuable player. But you mentioned him. Rod and I call him Pretty Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah.
My worry, not only as a 49ers fan, but also as a fantasy player, is if Juwan Jennings and or Brandon Ayuk are not on the field, Pretty Ricky gets a little bit more attention from whomever the other team believes is their top defensive back. And I think as a number one wide receiver, he has so much lesser value because his problem seems to be kind of getting off a line of scrimmage and getting through some of the tougher coverages. What do you see for Ricky? I sense that, and I've seen some stuff where it looks like people probably have a similar idea as me of that, you know, he's probably a good bet to have a pretty solid year. But I think my reason for being scared is probably a little bit different from others just because I know this team very well. I think some people think like, oh, if he's going to be the number one receiver, that means he's going to get more targets. And my fear is if he's the number one receiver, he's going to get bottled up and it's going to be other guys who are going to get in the mix. What are your thoughts on Pearsall?
I think it's fair to have that type of concern. My general thought process would be for Kyle Shanahan specifically is that you can have a number of wide receivers, like whether it's going to be, well, theoretically, it would have been DeMarcus Robinson that would have been able to play the outside. And this is a term coined by Matt Harmon, who does excellent work at Reception Perception, who does wide receiver evaluation. Guy like DeMarcus Robinson can play the sacrificial X receiver role. Essentially, the guy that's out there running wind sprints, getting his cardio in, but allows him to take away not just the top coverage from the other, but from the defense, but also require some level of safety help over the top. But of course, with the PED suspension that D-Rob is going to have to face, I think he's going to be out for three games, if I'm remembering correctly. That at least negates some of that. But still, let's say in an ideal world, you have somebody that's able to play on the outside. And then, of course, Ricky Pearsall is able to play on the interior. So that's where you can get at least somewhat softer coverage. For a lot of opposing defenses, a lot of them will structure their defense so that their perimeter corners are their strongest. And then once you get into the nickel position, it's either a safety that walks down to do some of that, or they do have a nickel corner. But relative to the other guys that play on the outside, they're not as always good, at least from a skill standpoint or talent perspective. So seeing the idea of having Ricky Pearsall, who in a few circles that I follow, Pearsall was comped to Cooper Kupp in his ability to run routes and has that level of agility to make those cuts and have that type of rapport with a quarterback so he can run some of those dig routes, those timing routes, where especially a quarterback like Brock Purdy, who has been able to show he can operate in that type of fashion, could make those that type of connection with a wide receiver like Ricky Pearsall. But also the fact that we've seen throughout the entirety of Kyle Shanahan as a play designer, he does like to access the middle of the field so that his wide receivers can work after the catch. And so, yes, I share your concern in that the coverage might be a little tougher, but in the way that Shanahan has been able to scheme up players and with the way that Pearsall, even after he came back from the gunshot wound towards the back end of last season, you can see a scenario where he does play a little bit more from the interior, whether it's like a pure slot or at least closely or more closely aligned to the formation, is able to get one of the softer coverage or one of the lesser defenders, like from the opposing defense, then also works across the middle of the field so that even if he is working in the short to intermediate parts of the field, he can work after the catch in order to generate some more yards. So he's getting the targets, he's getting the catches, which is for folks that play in half point and full point PPR leagues, you're getting production that way. And then if he's still able to pick up yards after the catch, which we do know from his athletic profile, he does have a little bit of burst in him so that he can at least get to the second level. I'm not saying he's going to break a long one like a George Kittle type, but still pick up the yards necessary to at least have a good enough performance for relative to where he's being drafted right now. I've seen eighth, ninth-ish round in some PPR leagues, which to me is fair for his relative role, like to the team and also to the other wide receivers drafted around him, that at least for where he's being drafted right now, he does seem like a guy that I'd be fine having him as my wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5, depending on how many more I've drafted earlier in my draft. And then afterwards, let's see what happens when Brandon Ayuk gets back on the field. Let's see what happens when some of the other wide receivers are back healthy. Let's hope and assume that that offensive line gels together so Brock Purdy isn't running for his life and scrambling as often he was in 2024. And let's see this passing offense get back to where it was at in 2022 and 2023. And then Ricky Pearsall can really outkick his draft costs as it is right now.
All right, Rod, you got one?
I came into the season and nothing has really changed my feeling on it, but I, in looking at, you know, what's going on, the soap opera that has unfolded, you know, with BA, it being confirmed he's not going to be here until at least week 6. The Juwan Jennings situation, you know, be it hold in or injury, I have thought since like February that this like stacks up to be like George Kittle 2019 version 2, where he was basically the X, the de facto X, and was a target monster. And I just think that it sets up for that to be the case. And that George, especially where he's coming off boards now, is a bye-bye. I want all the George Kittle stock I can get if I could get him at the 3-4 term. What do you think?
Oh, 100%. And I think for how George Kittle accrues a lot of his a lot of the volume that he's been able to get with Brock Purdy, and it's not just the fact that he gets the targets. And so for people that are drafting tight ends in the earlier parts of your drafts, let's say within rounds 1 through 6, you're looking for the guys that are going to be having around a 20-ish percent target share and or higher. And so for reference, about 20% target share, that's equates to about a wide receiver 2 on a team. So think your T. Higginses, let's think your Devonta Smiths, like those types of players. Essentially, you're looking for a tight end that's cosplaying as a wide receiver, right? The only difference between a pass catching tight end and a decent or wide receiver 2 or top 24 wide receiver is their designation or their position designation. That's really the only difference. And for George Kittle, that's pretty much been the case over the last 3 to 4 years. And especially since Brock Purdy became the starter for the 49ers. I mean, last three seasons alone, he's had 18.9% target share, 17%, 19%, 18%. So he's up there competing with the wide receivers, and of course with the tight ends that are typically drafted around him too. So looking at how he's been able to accrue volume, and it's also the receiving that the yards he's been able to generate from that standpoint, last season about 73, 74 yards per game, that's first among all tight ends. So I'm completely with you, Rod. If you are looking to essentially wait, and let's say your draft slot is around the 6th, 7th, 8th, somewhere in there, and you'll see Brock Bowers go either in the first or early parts of the second round, Trey McBride shortly after him, then trying to target a guy like George Kittle shortly afterwards is completely viable in my mind, because it not only allows you to get the value of a pass catcher like George Kittle, and as we were just talking about the injuries to the other wide receivers or other pass catchers that are attached to the 49ers offense. I mean, really right now, the only two healthy receivers for Brock Purdy are George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey. I mean, we're assuming Pearsall is going to be ready for week one, but of course that's been trending in the right direction, but we're not sure that's going to be the case for week one. But right now, the only two guys that we know for sure that are going to be available are CMC and George Kittle. So if I can get that level, that type of concentrated volume in what we know to be a efficient offense or efficiently designed offense from Kyle Shanahan, and we've seen George Kittle operate as an efficient receiver with the yards after the catch and also being able to generate explosive plays, and of course the connection that him and Brock Purdy have once they get into the red zone, yes, seeing him as a third-ish round tight end is very viable from that standpoint. And I would be more than happy to make that click if I see him available in my drafts as well.
So obviously, if you draft Christian McCaffrey, you are doing so with the hope that he is healthy. But I also, you also going to want to make sure you have somebody handcuffed to him more than likely. We don't even really know, like, Garendo, he was hurt a lot last year. I imagine that is the worry about him this year. They drafted a running back. They just signed Jeff Wilson Jr., who is an OG 49er. Like, it doesn't seem like there's great opportunity for, you know, a really solid handcuff yet, but is Garendo probably the likeliest guy that you would try and match him up with if you did draft CMC?
I think so. You could make the case for Jordan James just because of the athletic profile. If I'm remembering correctly, he's about 5'10", 205. So it's in the Bucky Irving, Chase Brown, that type of mold. So he doesn't have like the same weight that you would want to see for a guy that, if Christian McCaffrey, I'll knock on wood for my own sanity, if he were to go down, could Jordan James pick up all of the workload? And could he essentially be the running back option that's there on early downs? Is he also going to be the receiving option? And could he also operate in short yardage situations? Because that's what CMC has been able, that's what Kyle Shanahan has afforded Christian McCaffrey in previous years. But for Jordan James, I could see at least the early down work, potentially the receiving portion. He does have a little bit of that profile from college, about 7-8% target share when he was back in college. So I could see more of a committee between him and Garendo. So if I am looking to pair Christian McCaffrey with one of the running backs that might have some contingent value, I have tended towards Garendo, but that's just because we've seen him in action before. Mm-hmm. When it was Jordan Mason that went down towards the back end of last season, Garendo did have at least have some contingency as both the short yardage option, was running a route on around like 30 to 40% of the team's dropbacks. So at least he was out there playing the role of receiver like you would want to see from Christian McCaffrey. Didn't earn as many targets, but at the very least, if he becomes that pass catching option for Brock Purdy, at least it provides him with a potential floor for him from a fantasy standpoint. So I could see either way. I've just been leaning more towards Garendo because I've seen it in the past. But if somebody said, hey, I've seen Jordan James run, I've watched all of his college tape, the dude can pop once he gets the workload, more than happy to go along with it. I'm not going to fight you about that at all. I can see it from either standpoint. But just knowing the fact that you are investing in what should be an efficient offense, I think that's where it lies for me. I'd be willing to take shots on either of the guys just because we know that the opportunity is there. It should be productive touches for whomever winds up taking over the backfield in place of Christian McCaffrey.
Chris, we kind of just touched on it, but just as I've got your link, Garrett sent over your link, and I really love your point of view in terms of writing. And it just, several of your articles were like speaking directly to me. It just, as it works out, for my first team that I took. Now, one of the criticisms I know when you're online or in a Discord, when you put your draft out there, you are opening yourself for slings and arrows. But one of, I think, valid criticisms of my draft is that my second running back off the board. I took Chase Brown, and then I came back with Kenneth Walker, that I probably should have been a bit more aggressive with handcuffing Zach Charbonnet, which mm-hmm. is probably a fair criticism. But just as a what do I want to say? As a rule, how do you feel about handcuffs, and how aggressively do you seek them out?
Typically for me, my approach has been to draft other people's handcuffs and not my own, because if I'm looking at it from a standpoint of I'm looking for players that are going to be able to help my team week in and week out. And if I'm, and also that's one portion of it, but the other portion of it is I'm going to draft like I'm right. So Rod, if you drafted yes. Kenneth Walker, you should be drafting in the set, especially considering he has he had a fourth to fifth round average draft price. And so of course, with his foot injury that's been keeping him out of the preseason, Zach Charbonnet operating fairly well in that new zone blocking offense for Clint Kubiak, I can see a scenario where now folks are going to devalue Walker and start to up the value for a guy like Zach Charbonnet. But in either case, in that scenario where you're drafting him, I would want to draft Kenneth Walker, saying that that's going to be my RB2. He's going to be the RB1. Zach Charbonnet is not going to take over the backfield, and I'm not going to have to worry about it. But at the same time, understanding that that could potentially happen, I would be looking for other people's handcuffs. So let's say the person that drafted Caleb Johnson, rookie running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm looking for Jalen Warren. Somebody drafts Aaron Jones for the Minnesota Vikings, I'm looking for Jordan Mason JP. For the Vikings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just looking at what the other contingent value is for the other guys. That is how I try and stock up my running back room, because I don't want to try and figure out, well, which week is it going to be that I'm going to start Kenneth Walker or Zach Charbonnet? I've got too many other things I have to worry about. So if I can worry about fewer things, and then it's on top of all that, I now have the, let's say somebody else's backup because Caleb Johnson went down or Aaron Jones is now down. And now I have that contingent running back on my roster. Now I essentially have it at the very least a top 24 running back sitting on my bench. So much the better for me versus having to play those games of, well, who's going to be this week? Is it going to be Ken Walker? Zach Charbonnet looked pretty good last week too. I don't want to have to play those games. So for drafting handcuffs, instead of trying to draft two out of the same backfield, I'm typically looking for one out of one backfield and then try and get everybody else's. So I'm getting the Jalen Warrens, the Tajay Spears, even though Spears has been hurt in preseason, I recognize that, or the Jordan Masons or the Ray Davises or the Braylon Allens or the Bashal Tootens or the Tank Bigsby.
Yes.
Just hit that yes. every other backfield that you can think of. I want the RB2 out of that backfield to supplement all of my decisions for my starting running backs in the earlier rounds.
I'm looking for this year's Bucky Irving.
Yes, that's it. You got it.
So I had a question from somebody who plays with Rod and I, and he said, is there any worry about Puka because of and this is kind of similar to the Niners last year with the Stafford stuff, like, how worried are you about Stafford? And if there is a chance that Jimmy G or Stetson is the guy, does that drop Puka down a bit?
For me, not particularly at this point. If they're just because right now, what is it, day two or day three that we've seen Matthew Stafford back at practice, and with everything out of the Rams camp, even though Sean McVay was being a little coy about how he was reporting some of the Matthew Stafford injury stuff a couple of weeks ago. But let's assume that at this point, everything is moving in the right direction. But I would say that at the, let's say the early parts of the season, week six, week seven, or like first couple of months, let's say, no concern from that standpoint. Do I have concerns about what the longevity of his health is going to be? Absolutely. Matthew Stafford is what? 37, 38, already had multiple back injuries, neck injuries, things of that nature that he's had to either miss time for or has spent the larger part of off seasons having to rehab from. I mean, 100%. That is a concern of mine. And the same thing with Puka Nacua. That was going back to college, his college coaches have noted the fact that he would just throw himself into harm's way, almost literally put his body on the line in order to make some of the catches. And that's, of course, translated into the NFL, which has been great for fantasy managers. But of course, we've had a number of scares where Puka has been hurt and on the sidelines and what have you. So both of them play the game kind of recklessly. And they are fairly tough, and they get the moniker of being tough SOBs because of it. But just knowing how efficient Puka has been from a yards per route run standpoint, he has been one of the top three, top four wide receivers for the past 2 to 3 seasons, or essentially since he came into the league. And also the amount of volume that we can project for Puka when he's on the field with Matt Stafford. Of course, it's great to see a wide receiver like Davante Adams coming in and working alongside of him. But outside of those two wide receivers, who can we reasonably project to get volume within that offense? I know even for you guys out in the Bay Area, I'm sure not too many people are having arguments about having to draft Tutu Atwell. Nobody's rushing to the waiver wire. Nobody's rushing to their drafts to make sure they have Tyler Higbee or whatever other tight end has been kicking around the Rams roster. It has been the top two wide receivers over the past 2 to 3 seasons. It's been Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, and then nobody else. Even Kyren Williams, their RB1, has not been heavily involved, or at least involved enough into the passing game to vault him into the second or first round. It's just been most of the rushing production and just the level of efficiency that the Rams offense has. So if I'm drafting Puka, not just under the auspices of Matthew Stafford being his quarterback, but it's also under the idea that he's going to get more volume relative to the other wide receivers that I'm going to find after him. So if I can at least project health, maybe short term for Matthew Stafford, and of course project the health of Puka Nacua, I know that I'm getting a wide receiver that is not only going to receive 27, 28, 29% of the targets, but also operates at a part of the field or can be like one of the more efficient wide receivers in the league that I'm going to be looking at 100 plus yards per game and also a touchdown here and there. So for me, I'm not as worried about Puka, but of course, when we've seen how they play their game, that is one of the things that is just going to be involved with drafting a wide receiver. And of course, a wide receiver like Puka and a quarterback like Matthew Stafford.
He also had another question, and shout out to Kevin, my cousin. I think he started playing with me. He had to have been a teenager, and I think a young teenager too. Who is the second best rookie running back to target? And he gave Hampton, Harvey, Henderson. Obviously, the first one is Ashton Jeanty. Who would you have on your list as like the second rookie behind Jeanty?
Oh, it's easily Trevion Henderson. I mean, of course, if you wanted to push up a guy like Amarian Hampton because of all the news swirling Najee Harris and the eye injury that he sustained during the 4th of July, if you wanted to talk about RJ Harvey and the fact that we haven't really heard much else out of the Broncos camp regarding the other running backs, haven't heard much about Jaleel McLaughlin. Audric Estime that they drafted last year hasn't made much of the headlines. And even them adding J.K. Dobbins, of course, I can understand from a pass blocking standpoint why they would add him. It's really just been the R.J. Harvey show. So both of those guys, Hampton and Harvey, I could see making the case for. But it's the pass catching and also rushing production for Trevion Henderson that I'm most interested in, because that's the way that running backs can really outkick their draft cost. And that's what we've seen from the early round running backs. I mean, we've been talking about Christian McCaffrey earlier. What does he have to his game? Not just the rushing portion, but it's the receiving portion. Because when you're playing these half point PPR games, full point PPR formats, you really need to have that receiving acumen in order to vault you into the top 24 and top 12. And Trevion has highlighted that throughout most of camp. We've seen the clips of Drake May hitting him on not just the easy dump off routes where the running back goes right in front of the line of scrimmage, turns around, catches a pass, flips back around and goes for 5 or 6 yards. No, it's been wheel routes. It's been Trevion Henderson operating as not just a slot receiver, but also out wide. And of course, Drake May and his penchant for hucking the ball downfield 8, 9, 10 yards at a clip. seeing Henderson operate as a receiver downfield, that's what I'm looking for. And it's the same way that we've seen Kyle Shanahan use Christian McCaffrey. So if we're getting that type of usage out of, or at least that type of usage in training camp and also parts of the preseason out of a rookie like Travion Henderson, and of course we can project a scenario where he's battling with Ramondre Stevenson for the rushing work. Stevenson has had fumble issues in the past. And of course, while he has been able to operate in short yardage situations, his early down rushing success rate and efficiency in those areas could be clearly outdone by a running back like Travion Henderson, as we've seen throughout his collegiate profile. So from where we saw Travion Henderson being drafted towards the earlier parts of the offseason, where it was more of a, yeah, we can kind of see how he could operate alongside a guy like Ramondre Stevenson, to now throughout most of training camp and preseason, it's a no kidding. He could take over this backfield and really be not just a rusher and receiver that you would want from a running back standpoint. For me, it's definitely been Travion Henderson as the best running back, or the second best running back out of this class.
You have another one, Rod?
Yeah, I do. Since we are a 49er podcast, I want to go about it. I'm going to ask it this way. It seems like most rankings have top four or five quarterbacks, depending, you know, that first tier is, you know, what it is. And then, so basically what I'm asking from a build standpoint, how do you see a draft going where I end up with Brock Purdy? Because I've done like 100 mocks, and I haven't come up with him hardly at all. But as a 49er fan, and you know, for our fans, what does an optimal build look like where you end up with Brock Purdy as your quarterback?
So at least for me, I've seen for Brock Purdy specifically, I've seen him drafted as around like the quarterback 10, somewhere in there, like a fringe, like top 12-ish, but he's around like that 10, 11 like type draft cost, at least relative to the other quarterbacks. And so from an ADP standpoint, that's typically turned out to be, let's say, the 9th, 10th-ish round, like somewhere in there. And so if I'm looking at it from a build standpoint, the way that I typically like to address the early rounds, one of my objectives is leave with all of my core starters. And by core starters, I mean the players from the running backs and wide receivers, because we have to start all of those positions. We have to start more of those positions than our quarterbacks and tight ends, right? We only start one quarterback and one tight end. We start at least two running backs and, let's say, at the very least, three wide receivers. So drafting as many of those in the early rounds where we have the best shot to get the highest producing players at those positions, that's what I'm trying to do. But I also like to try and take a detour at quarterback or tight end. And so in this case, if we're aiming for a guy like Brock Purdy, I'm looking to get, like, trying to not focus on quarterback. Let's say I get my early round tight end. So if you want to go for George Kittle in the early rounds, knowing you're going to get Brock Purdy later and have that stack, completely fine with it. But in the meantime, I'm looking for those early round running backs that you were talking about earlier. You want Chase Brown, get you a Chase Brown, and maybe try and get George Kittle in the third round. Your first round, try and get one of those high-end wide receivers. Also building out some of the mid-range like running backs as well. So your Amarian Hamptons, your Kenneth Walkers, assuming Kenneth Walker is healthy, and the other wide receivers that typically go in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round. Your Jameson Williams, your George Pickens, some of the other guys that can really fill in that wide receiver position. But then afterwards, as you're working towards your depth pieces, some of those bench guys, the running backs we were talking about earlier, your Jalen Warren, your Jordan Masons. But then once you get into that realm, that's where I'm looking to pull the trigger on a Brock Purdy, essentially having most of my running backs, wide receivers, and tight end squared away. So I have like 6, 7, 8 players like already set in my starting roster, maybe at least one or two on my bench. And after that, I'm dropping a guy like Brock Purdy right onto the top of my starting roster right after that. That's how I would see, just knowing where he's typically getting drafted at. So again, the 9th, 10th round, that would allow me to set up most of my starters, have 8 starters already, or 6 or 7 starters already set, maybe 1 or 2 on my bench, and then drop Brock Purdy right on top of that afterwards.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Go for it.
Can I ask one quick follow-up on that? What it ends up that tier kind of always looks like to me is like, it's like Murray, Knicks, Fields, Purdy, Prescott, and May. Mm-hmm. How does that shake out for you when you look at that tier of quarterback?
For me, I'm willing to let a lot of the other drafters take the Bo Nixes of the world. While he does have some mobility to him, I'm willing to let somebody mm-hmm. else take him. Justin Fields, mm-hmm. we've been hearing a lot of the training reports out of camp about how the offense hasn't really been clicking yet. We'll see how much he can evolve as a passer, even though he had just those six games in Pittsburgh. I'll let somebody else take him. So those first two guys I'm willing to let off the board. And then after that, I am trying to eye what everybody's going to be doing afterwards. And my sense, and this is just more of a qualitative or subjective opinion than anything quantitative, is that folks are going to be more willing to take Dak Prescott ahead of Brock Purdy. All of the highlights mm-hmm. out of camp right now have been, well, Dak is healthy. We've seen that offense be more prolific from a pass volume standpoint in the past when Dak Prescott has been healthy. And of course, the addition of George Pickens makes that offense one of the more popular offenses that folks are going to want to target. So if I can already see a scenario where folks are going to want to draft Bo Nix, everybody's looking at Justin Fields for the rushing. Also, Dak Prescott is going to be one of the more popular quarterbacks once you get into the middle-ish rounds of your draft. I can already tick off three quarterbacks that people are going to take ahead of them. And so then afterwards, it's all right. Well, now I can start to look at Brock Purdy, and I can see a scenario where he can fall to me versus me having to be more aggressive on him. Just looking at other quarterbacks that typically go around where he's drafted, and even Drake May for that standpoint, because people know that Drake May mm-hmm. is going to be a scrambler. He's got Stephon Diggs. We just talked about Travion Henderson and his pass catching ability. So from a value standpoint, there are some other quarterbacks that folks will either definitely take ahead of him, take ahead of Brock Purdy, or at least take around him so that I know where I'm going to need to be more aggressive on Brock Purdy, or I can sit back and wait and draft him when he kind of falls to me.
One more follow-up, and then I'm sorry, Gary.
No, you got it. Go for it.
This is something that this is a decision that I see a lot, is Murray or Purdy.
I can see I'm more of a Murray guy. That's more so because I'm looking at Murray from a rushing standpoint than anything else. And also, this might be a me wish casting how OC Drew Petsing is going to use Marvin Harrison in his second season. Because one of the issues that I had with how Marvin Harrison was deployed in his first season was he was playing that sacrificial X receiver role, where he's primarily playing on the outside, running a lot of the deeper, like intermediate and deep routes, like from either what along the perimeter, didn't see too many targets from the slot. I think he only had around a 20% snap share from the interior part of the field. And this is your wide receiver one. This is the guy that they went out and drafted with early round draft capital, and yet he's not being given those layup type targets. You see how
let's go win.
Yeah, just put the ball in his hands, put him on a slant route or a quick hitch or something along those lines, and let him win after the catch. And if I can see more of that development for Harrison in year two, that is what gives me some hope that Kyler Murray at least can have that type of quarterback season we've been wanting for him since he came into the league. And of course, we've been hearing the discussion from him throughout the offseason of how he feels about his knee after the ACL tear a couple of seasons ago. And I can understand from his standpoint not wanting to run in 2024 because he is still getting mm-hmm. more comfortable with that rushing production. So if I can project or I can see a scenario where Kyler Murray does want to rush a bit more in 2025, and we're also seeing the receiving production from a guy like Marvin Harrison also start to evolve as a pass catcher, I can see where Kyler Murray can have the type of quarterback season that at least have him at one, maybe one step ahead of a guy like Brock Purdy.
Rod, do not apologize. When do we get an opportunity like this to ping and ask questions to one of the smartest minds in this fantasy business? All right. No, two more and we'll let you go because you've already stayed longer than I asked.
That's a problem. Yeah.
Okay. So obviously with everyone has their different rankings, and part of fantasy drafting is looking for an opportunity where maybe the player is being overlooked for one reason or another. And because a lot of people really follow these rankings very closely, and some of it is groupthink as well, where you're like, okay, I get it. this is where people feel that this person's going to fall. But actually, I think that this person is underrated. Do you have a, this person is being underrated in drafts right now, who you in your own drafts are actually looking to grab before some of the other folks who are drafting?
Yes, actually, it's so great that you asked me about that. So one of the guys that instantly came to mind as you were giving me that question is Zay Flowers, the wide receiver for the Baltimore Ravens. And so when you think about Zay Flowers, it's not even Zay Flowers. First, the thing that you think of when you see think about the Baltimore Ravens, it's Lamar Jackson, then it's Derrick Henry, and then in 2023 and maybe the back end of 2024, it was Mark Andrews. And then you think about Zay Flowers, right? Even though by default, Flowers is the wide receiver one for his team, earned about 24-25% target share just this past season. He is their wide receiver one, but we do not care, or at least we like relative to where he's being drafted, we don't care about his status on the team because we know it's the Lamar Jackson show featuring Derrick Henry. And then, oh, by the way, there's this dude, Zay Flowers, that's also like kicking it over there on the team as well. But also where the wide receivers that are being drafted around Zay Flowers. I'll give you a few names that are being drafted around Zay Flowers right now. DJ Moore, Cortland Sutton, they're being drafted ahead of him. And then Xavier Worthy and George Pickens. You can make the case for any of those guys as being better suited for fantasy production than Zay Flowers. DJ Moore, now playing with Caleb Williams, he's going to get all the work, no Keenan Allen, better than Zay Flowers. Cortland Sutton, I mean, they just traded away Devon Vele, even though that doesn't really matter, but he's the wide receiver one because he gets those targets downfield, has the report, Bo Nix, better than Zay Flowers. Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice is going to be suspended for half the season, apparently. We can see him as the wide receiver one. Travis Kelce's too old. Catching passes from Patrick Mahomes, better than Zay Flowers. George Pickens, going to be catching bombs from Dak Prescott, better than Zay Flowers. Even though, let's forget the fact that Zay Flowers, out of the entire group, had the second most explosive catches in 2024. Let's forget the fact that out of that group of six wide receivers, he was also third in target share. Let's also forget the fact that he plays on one of the better teams. The Ravens, they scored more points than the Bears, than the Broncos, than, well, not the Chiefs, and definitely the Cowboys. But, of course, the Cowboys had the injury to Dak Prescott. He plays on a good offense. He is the team's wide receiver one. He does get targets down the field, and he does create explosive catches at the same rate as all the rest of those guys. But because we hype up the other situations, Caleb Williams with Ben Johnson and the Bears could be DJ Moore's season. Cortland Sutton now, he just got the extension. Bo Nix, he's the next big thing, one of the better quarterbacks out of his class. I mean, there's all these perceptions about all the other situations, whereas it's been Zay Flowers as one of the guys that for the past couple of years, his game has continued to evolve, stepped up from an average depth of target standpoint. He was more of a gadget guy in his first season, now operating more as a typical or prototypical wide receiver one. Still capable of catching passes, not just in the short area of the field, but also deep. Seen him beat my Bengals plenty of times down the field. So he is one of the guys that I can see where we have overhyped the other wide receivers being drafted around him. Whereas I'm just as happy taking Zay Flowers, even a half round behind most of those guys, than what other people are drafting, considering we can get the same value or the same production out of Zay Flowers relative to the guys that he's being drafted around.
All right. I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about guillotine leagues as we get out of here, because I know that was a big thing for fantasy life. I know you guys raised some money, and Matthew was on a couple of different podcasts where I really heard him hype up the guillotine leagues. And you guys have some sort of agreement or partnership or purchasing of the actual IP of guillotine leagues or something like that. Mm-hmm. This is a very popular new way to play fantasy football for the masses. So talk a little bit about guillotine leagues and why people enjoy it, and what is kind of the hook around playing in this way versus the other ways that people play.
Well, like we were talking at the beginning of the show, if there's a new format or if there's you've gone down the rabbit hole of fantasy football and you want to see what's the new thing that's going on, one of the big things about Fantasy Life is we're here to talk with you and teach you about some of the formats that are out there, and Guillotine is one of them. And for those that aren't aware, let's say you have 17, 18 people you want to get into a league. That sounds ridiculous at first. Drafting with that many people in a league, your team is going to look horrendous after, let's say, even the fifth or sixth round, just from the number of people in there. But get through your draft. Start the season. The thing with Guillotine leagues is, after each week, the person with the lowest score, they get the chop. They are out of the league. They are completely done. And now afterwards, their roster, whomever was on it, from the first round to the 18th round or however many rounds that you have in your draft, all their players get dumped onto the waiver wire. So if the person with the lowest score had Lamar Jackson, Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, whomever on their roster, they are now out there on the waiver wire for you to try and bid against in order to pick up onto your team. You're essentially now being able to replace some of your duds with their studs afterwards. So that's where the fun comes in. That's where the strategy comes in. Each week, as long as you're not last, you have the ability to be able to add to your team and improve your team as the weeks and months go on. And so it's become this new strategy or this new way to approach the same game that we've been playing for. I know, Greg, you were saying you've been doing it since the 90s. We've been doing this game for people doing this game for 30 years. And now we have a new way to approach this. And it's so fun and entertaining. For me, I've told this story because for folks that aren't aware, go to Fantasy Life. We have the Fantasy Life newsletter. There's also a Guillotine newsletter written by Paul Charchian, who is the creator of Guillotine Leagues. Also features me as one of the writers for the newsletter as well. And in the first newsletter that I wrote, I told about the story where the very first year, this was around 2002, when I was first introduced to Guillotine Leagues. In the first week, I had drafted Brock Purdy as my quarterback, but the person that went out after week one, they had Lamar Jackson on their team. And I was like, well, I'm going to go out and get Lamar Jackson. I spent all $1,000 of my budget in the first week on Lamar Jackson. I was out in 2 weeks afterwards. I was like, what happened? I got Lamar Jackson. I thought I was going to win. It's things like that where you don't think about, or there's no real understanding of the ramifications of, well, I just wanted to get this, but I saw this great player on here. Derrick Henry is now sitting on the waiver wire. What am I going to do? Not pick him up? It's the incremental additions so that you're not last in your league that you have to consider playing for the floor versus trying to swing for the fences like we typically do in managed leagues. Mm-hmm. That makes Guillotine Leagues just a different format and so very entertaining. We've had a Guillotine League that's been started within the company. So we have a little bit of trash talk each week of who's going to be the last person available or who's going to be the one that winds up taking down the entire league. Dwayne McFarlane, I believe he was the one that won the company league last year. So it's just, again, a new take on this game that we've been loving for decades. So I very much encourage people to check it out. Go check out the app. Go check out the Guillotine website. Start playing it and just test it out with your friends and see if you're the one that winds up getting chopped. You're the one that winds up making it all the way to the end. So very much encourage folks to check it out.
Since you said this is the last year of Matthew writing the love-hate column, I do hope he requests emails from people who were eliminated in week one of Guillotine Leagues to hear the horror stories of those. Because, man, can you imagine the draft is everything, right? It's so exciting. Mm-hmm. And then you play and you keep up. But if you're done after week one, I can't even imagine. I would be mad. I would be so mad. Mm-hmm. Chris, you are at Chris Allen, FFWX. On Twitter/X. Is there anything else you want to promote before we get out of here?
No, please, for folks that have any sort of knowledge about the other folks that are contributing, if you've enjoyed the conversation here but want to check out some of the other folks that are contributing to the site, whether it's Kendall Valenzuela, Pete Overzet, I can mention the great Dwayne McFarlane, Ian Harditz, any of those folks, and please go check out the site. It's such a wonderful cast of folks that are working there, either in front of the camera or behind the camera. It's been such a wonderful opportunity to be able to work there. I encourage people to go and take a look at it, subscribe to the site, even the free parts, the free newsletter, the free Guillotine newsletter, and all of that, and just check out what we have over there. So fantasylife.com. Tell them I sent you. Please, I appreciate everybody for going and taking a look at it.
All right, I will link to your profile on that website, which is the same one I sent to Rod, where he was able to read some of your stuff. We'll link all of that stuff in the summaries and in the show notes on all YouTube and our podcast feed. So, Chris, appreciate you. This was a whole lot of fun. Like we talked about earlier, I've been playing since 1994, and it is an incredible evolution of a game. And I just have a blast doing it. Like, sometimes I'm like, man, I've been commissioner for how many years now? Do I need to give it up? But I'm sticking with it. My kids are now in the league, and they were bugging me when they were like 13 years old. And I'm like, nope, you got to wait. But they've been playing. So it's just fun. It's like a nice little family thing for us.
That's amazing.
I want to thank Chris from Fantasy Life. Also, Rod. Thank you, Rod, for everything you do.
Thank you, Chris.
All right. I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.